The Real Estate Revolution is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice. Please consult your trusted financial advisor, real estate professional, or attorney before making any real estate or financial decisions. Please remember, when following advice, your results may vary, and all information covered here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the hosts and guests consider important.
With the latest fake real estate news, you can learn all the facts that will keep you on track and use them any way you choose.
And now it's time for a power hour from America's trusted resource for everything real estate. Everything in the real estate industry is in a constant movement of change. It's a real estate revolution with your host, Victoria Riva De Nera, and her co-host, Scott Forcino. Welcome to the Real Estate Revolution.
Good evening and happy Monday. I'm Victoria Riva De Nera, president of the Northeast Division for Exit Realty Corp International, and I'm a licensed real estate broker in New York State for about 25 years. I'm also a member of the National Association of Realtors and many other associations. And tonight, I have the pleasure of being locked in the studio at WFAS with Scott Forcino.
Hi.
Scott, tell us about yourself.
I am a longtime lawyer for about 22 years, and I'm with Exit Realty Group as well. I've been a broker since around 1990, I want to say seven.
And why are we here tonight?
We're here to, I like to say, pull back the curtain and let some of our listeners know what their rights are and obligations when buying and selling. Give them the freedom from being sold, or give them a real resource they could call in and learn, have their questions answered.
Now, speaking of calling in, our call-in number is 914-693-5700. That's 914-693-5700. So the real estate industry right now is going through a movement of change. Yes or no, Scott?
I'd say so. We're a few years after the recovery. Interest rates are still at historic lows. And we're speaking for this county, Westchester. I hear that there are bidding wars back, and properties are staying on the market a very short period of time, and there are very low inventory.
So when you say bidding wars are back, you're saying that that is a change from a few years ago? There were no bidding wars a couple of years ago, right?
Right. Well, going back a few years, when there was such an ease in the marketplace to secure funding, there were many more buyers in the pool, and as we know, that wasn't a good thing. But then it got a lot more strict with lending, and a property could sit on the market for some time. Now it seems that the lending requirements are a bit more rational. People are qualified.
Rational? You call this rational?
I call part of it the review of their income, assets, and credit rational. Seems to be those kind of qualified buyers.
You don't think it went from one extreme all the way to the other?
It did, I think, and it's loosening a bit now.
It is definitely loosening a bit now. Those are definitely some of the changes that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So what other changes are we seeing in the market right now?
Well, there's a thing that I don't know if it affects Westchester as much. There's a big mortgage disclosure new process called the Truth in Lending, RESPA disclosure, the TRID for short, where people are getting, fortunately, much more transparency, and they see that what their closing costs are, their payments on their mortgage, and in about 7 to 10 days before closing, versus going to the closing. Not that I've ever seen this in person, and getting walloped with by huge closing costs, and they don't even know that their biggest cost is usually the title bill, which includes title insurance premiums. My sister-in-law Lucy was a big opponent of the going to a closing and not knowing everything. It was her, I guess, C-type personality, had to know. But I used to tell her, there's no way to know. We get the bill at the last minute.
All right. I'm going to just take you back a little bit, because you're going on to some topics that are just a little bit too complicated right now. You have not given us an intro into what all of that means.
Okay.
So I'm just going to pull you back out of the mortgage industry and bring you back to real estate. What are some of the changes that we're seeing in the real estate industry as far as your office is concerned? You're leading a real estate office in Elmsford, yes?
Elmsford Exit Realty Group.
Yep. And right now, tell me about first-time home buyers. I mean, a couple of years ago, we saw that there were a lot of investors out there. They were really ruling the market because it was a buyer's market. Mm-hmm. And the restrictions were so tight with the lending institutions, right? So you saw a lot of the investors coming into the market. Is that the same today?
They exist, but really there's FHA, the Federal Housing Administration loans, which allow buyers to get involved in a transaction and complete the purchase with only about 3.5% down. And they even have some liberal guidelines with regard to gifts from parents. And those, are they Gen Y? Are they millennials? Those young folks, those first-time buyers with maybe nothing to sell, have a real shot in the market now to put together a compelling offer and to secure their home.
All right, so you're seeing a lot more first-time home buyers coming into the market.
They exist, yeah.
They absolutely exist. There's about 41% of home buyers in the Northeast are first-time home buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
I did know that. And the people, those folks are really, really young and web savvy, and they have all the information at their fingertips. They're doing their research. I think they can Google the closing, but there's a real need for professionals like our colleagues to represent them and demonstrate the value that these realtors deliver.
You touched on a couple of things right there. You said that the younger generation is Googling everything. They're going onto the internet. We know that 92% of buyers are starting their search online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so where are they going? What are they doing? And why? What are you seeing? What changes are you seeing?
Well, first of all, they're less so going to their chained to their desktop PC. They're, of course, on their tablets, of course, on their iPhones and Droid devices. They see everything through the apps, Zillow and Trulia are now merged, are one entity, albeit a little bit different flavor. And Realtor.com, which is our own portal, was just bought by Rupert Murdoch, and he's making a really, really aggressive attempt to capture some of those online leads. The younger people are, of course, going online first. I think they appreciate the opportunity to search without being sold. They are not approached in some retail environment. They love that there's a chance to see what's out there, compare them, and see.
Well, no different than the retail market. You know, I go out shopping, and what happens? The salesperson comes over and says, "Could I help you?" And what do I tell the salesperson? No, I'm just looking.
Right. And it's always that pushback on
that's
some salesy
right.
approach.
That's right. So we talked about 92% of the buyers using the internet to begin their search. And you said a lot of people, especially the younger generation, is using their mobile devices right now. It's actually 50% of the buyers are not even using their computer. They're using their mobile device.
Sure.
How does that affect realtors?
I think that it affects realtors in one important way, where they're told that they have to respond immediately within 5 seconds or 5 minutes of an inquiry, which may be a bit of a conflict because not everyone who's looking to see the inside of a home has the credit, income, and assets and the capability or even the interest in actually buying the home. It might make, there's a phrase called the Pop-Tart agent, where the agents are put in a position where they know that to fulfill their duties to the listing agent and to the seller, they have to know if the buyer can actually buy the place, and really, if they can't, why are they in the home? So it's a bit of a conflict. People want to see the home, and that's all they care about is getting inside and seeing.
Right. And tell me about, you know, mobile sites. You know, is everyone using a mobile site, you know, when they're selling real estate? I'm talking about the realtor.
Absolutely. There were called at one point third-party syndicators. I think through listing syndication and through the aggregating of these listings, it's available. The horse, they like to say, the horse ran out of the barn door, the genie's out of the bottle. That really is not the value proposition of a realtor. I think that it's a great thing that the least important function of a realtor has been ceded to the consumer. I mean, why not go on Honda and check out the next car you want to buy? Why do you need a realtor who doesn't know which neighborhood or which home style you need to search? That should appropriate.
So you're saying the technology doesn't really matter so much. It's dealing with the realtor themselves? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying the search function is, I'm glad, and I think realtors are glad that they've been relieved of that search function. Their value is that of consulting, of being a valued resource, of having market knowledge and insight, of being able to effectively negotiate. Let's not forget about that. Negotiate.
Oh, you're going too quick for me. Again, you know, slow down a little bit. Relax.
I'm relaxed.
Have a seat. When we were talking about mobile sites, you know, that's really where I started. And I asked you, you said, yes, absolutely, everyone's using them. I'm not so sure that that's true. I was just in a group of realtors at an event, and there were several realtors, if you can believe this, that actually said they don't even have a website, let alone a mobile site. How are you handling that when an agent wants to come and work for you? Do you tell them that this is what they have to do, or are you showing them the benefits? Are they using mobile sites in your office?
Mobile websites or the
yes.
listing syndicators? Well, that said,
everything.
Research will be done on agents before selection, so of course they need to have a web presence. It should give a bit of their experience, some of their listings, a little bit about them personally, that they're a member of the community if they are, and some specialties or some designations. I understand that that's where people are going to look. In fact, I think there's nowhere else you can look in these days but online. There's no more books or records of any type. So yes, they should have it.
I remember those days.
I barely remember those days.
Oh, give me a break.
I barely do.
Is that because you forgot because you're old? Or are you saying that you're too young to remember?
I remember when they were shipping the books and people still wanted the books. They need to have a web presence just to be taken seriously and to demonstrate their value. But you bring up a point. Not all realtors are looking for this search engine optimization. They're not necessarily looking for web leads, because I think you might have in one of your statistics what percentages of transactions are still referrals, and it's still an overwhelming majority that if you need something, a plumber, electrician, a realtor, or even a dentist, you might say, who do you use? I'm new to the area. So it's a great way. I think business is done with people who you know, you like, you trust, however, of course. But you cannot go these days. That would be like having an entry in an old encyclopedia with a page intentionally left blank. It can't be blank.
Okay.
You like that analogy?
I like that analogy. You're like the master of analogies, though, right?
Sure.
you mentioned the study. The study shows that 82% of real estate sales are the result of agent contacts from previous clients, referrals, friends, family, and personal clients. Mm-hmm. You know, so basically what this is telling me, and from the information that you just shared, is that they are going onto the web, they are looking, and then they are then finding the neighborhood, finding the type of house, finding the price that they like, and then they're going back and finding a referral of an agent to use. Do you believe that to be true?
Do you find
that they're finding agents on the actual web?
Well, Zillow's business model is to sell advertising to agents. So if someone's looking for a property within the parameters that they're seeking, they might find a house they love in the right price range and in the right area. But the next step is to select an agent, and there are three or four faces there that are those that are offered to the
So they are looking on the web and selecting their realtor, yes?
At least in selecting someone to contact. And that's the point.
That's what we're trying to figure out. Are they finding the person that is going to sell them the next house or help them find the next house on the web? Or are they going back and getting this through a referral? If you have an answer to that, give us a call at 914-693-5700. What are your thoughts?
I think they're doing both.
They're doing both.
They're always going to ask for referrals. However, when they see that there's someone's face to click on and it has no cost to them, they naturally press the button, and the realtors, for want of a better word, scurry to get that call into them to see if they can respond to that inquiry.
You just hit a topic there when you said it is at no cost to them to hit that button. Explain that.
Do you want to explain it after the break, or do you want to...
No, you have a full minute. You
okay,
can do
I've
it. You talk fast. Remember, I had to keep slowing you down.
Okay. Well, it's thought or it's seen, and this is a really, really interesting topic to discuss. Is it at no cost? Of course, the seller is legally obligated in this area is what to pay.
In this area, meaning New York?
In this part of New York. You know, this is where we are in this radio station. They're legally obligated, but what an old broker friend of mine says, but where does the money come from? Mm-hmm. The buyer funds the purchase. So that is a whole can of worms. I mean, really.
So the seller's writing the check.
And the seller's legally obligated to write the check, but they're writing it out of...
But the money is incorporated into the price that the buyer is paying.
Right. It could be the initial down payment, or it could be the proceeds from a lender.
Okay. It is time for us to go to a break. We are going to take a quick break, and we're going to resume that. Call us at 914-693-5700. And we're back. Give us a call at 914-693-5700. I'm Victoria Rivadeneira. I have Scott Forsino in the house here today.
In the house.
And we are talking about who is paying for the realtor. Is it the buyer or is it the seller?
Oof. What do you mean by pay? Fund the loan? Fund the percent?
Who's paying the commission? Right? Isn't that the big question?
Well, I could point out a contract that says the seller has to pay it. However, the seller, if there's no purchase, has nothing to pay. So the buyer comes with their own proceeds, with their and their loan. The lender writes a check at the closing, and it could be argued that it's a bit duplicitous because that commission. Oh, do I want to go? That commission.
I'm watching.
That,
oh, yeah.
That commission is usually added to the price. It could be a bit of a. It could be a bit of a problem because that increased price makes higher down payment, higher monthly cost, higher loan amount, higher transfer taxes, and a need for a higher appraisal. So these buyers just kind of willy-nilly place an offer, don't understand that their offer will always include the realtor's commission.
Okay.
Better question is, anyone who's ever dealt with a realtor, are they candid with their compensation? Do they willingly share it? Is it a don't ask, don't tell thing?
Well, what do you think? What's the practice in your office right now?
Our office is to be much more candid. I mean, it's a different kind of a company that's more, I would say, client and, of course, agent-oriented. However, from what I've seen, and I've seen things all over Manhattan and Long Island, there is a real nice attempt to keep the financial conversation under wraps, to just drive someone around, you're their best friend, the kids play Little League together, you send turkey recipes in the holidays, maybe bring
over... But that leads us to the next question. You know where I'm going with that, right? Who's being represented here?
Well, there was a world, I guess this was during the dinosaur era.
Yeah, with sub-agency was around. Yeah.
And then there was a breakthrough, I would guess, in the late 80s, early 90s,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I would say early 90s.
Where buyer agency became a thing, and people would...
Well, the agency disclosure, I think, came out around 1991, so it had to be around that time.
Right, exactly. But still... Well, it's still a bit duplicitous because we could ask our audience, if a realtor or a real estate professional says they're going to work for you, you're accepting all of their work and all of their obligations. However, what percentage of our buying public has actually ever committed to one agent and given their own liability for the cost?
Should they?
I think they should. I think that they should. I don't use the L word, loyalty, because that's a personal trait. I use the word liability. And if the realtor is working for you as a fiduciary with your best interest in mind, why isn't it also the same? Why aren't you willing to exchange your liability / loyalty? You have one dentist,
mm-hmm.
one dry cleaner, one...
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. What are your thoughts? Call us 914-693-5700 and let us know, where is your loyalty? Do you have loyalty? Are you being represented by your realtor? And here's a better question. Are all real estate agents realtors?
I know the answer. Do you want to know the answer?
The answer is no. I hope you know the answer.
Well, I mean, let's talk about New York State. I don't even think that was not the perfect question. The perfect question is only there's the license
that
sales
was
person.
Not the perfect question?
No, the perfect question is, are all your licensees realtors? Because there's licensed salespersons, then there's associate brokers, then there's brokers. There are brokers in Manhattan or even out in the Hamptons who are not realtors, and a realtor...
Okay.
What does a realtor mean?
Go ahead. Rephrase the question.
Are all licensees... Real estate agent is really just a common term. And then are those... Is a realtor synonymous with broker? And the answer is no. We have a realtor...
We have a caller.
Good.
I'm gonna have you stop, and okay. Let's go to Bob the Realtor in... Pennsylvania, and he actually says that he is a realtor. Bob, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. So you say you are a realtor.
Yes, I'm a realtor.
What does that mean? I have to say it that way because it would drive everybody crazy when people say what.
No, it's two syllables, not three.
Realtor. It is
realtor?
Not realtor,
oh,
right? Realtor.
My wife still says realtor all these years.
So tell us, what is the difference between an agent / broker and a realtor, Bob?
Well, honestly, I'm actually more interested in the topic that you guys were just hitting on. We can come back to that in a second, regarding the payment, who's paying the realtor.
Everyone loves that.
Okay,
system.
Who's paying?
Right? Because it's interesting, because being in the business for as long as I have, you know, the value seems to always be set with the commissions already built into it. And you wonder if there's not a different, you know, we've done it this way forever because that's the way the prices were set. So a value in a neighborhood at $250,000, it's set that way because it's built in that the 6% is already into that.
Hmm.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, so as a buyer coming in, one would say, well, you know, I'm paying 6%, do the math, whatever that is, $12,000, $15,000, $18,000 right there quickly on it. You know, I want to have that offset and taking it down against that, like Scott was saying a second ago. But yet, then who pays it to represent the seller to get it on the flip side?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you. I mean, I don't agree with your premise that the value has the broker's commission built in, because in a state matter where there might not be a broker, they may get an independent appraisal and establish the value.
Based on recent sales, all of which already had commissions built into that.
Very good point, Bob. Mm-hmm. Very, very good point.
I got it. That might
be. You're jumping into a one very small arena of all the sales that exist, and actually that becomes more beneficial for the estate, if you will, because that value is set there if there's no realtor involved. But the estate gets the better end of that deal, and the poor buyer, the buyer still pays what they pay. The estate just wins.
So the estate makes more because they avoid a broker's commission. And that, you know, it's an esoteric example. I agree.
And you can't tell me that you haven't heard buyers come to you and say, I want to make the deal directly with the seller to save the commission.
Right. Right. Sure.
Right. You don't see for sale by owners putting their house up, taking that 6% off. They're trying to capitalize on it, too, because
exactly.
That's where the values have been set.
Right. Well, that's, you know, their greedy nature. Got it.
So, Bob, in your opinion, who is paying the realtor?
In an indirect way, I would be saying the buyer's paying for it.
It's certainly indirect. Yeah. It's literally not direct.
The check is being drafted on behalf of the seller, but it's built into what the buyer is going to be mortgaging or paid cash for the next, paid cash or mortgage it for the next 15, 20, or 30 years. So the buyer, I think, at the end of the day, really is paying for the commission.
I've seen some extreme examples where, let's say in the day it was 95% loans, so 5% down. I've seen lawyers hold, because we're talking about our area here, not in Pennsylvania, lawyers hold the down payment, the escrow check. So
I mean,
they hold.
It's weird in New York anyway.
It's weird, right? It is weird. We know that. But the lawyers rule here.
It must be nice, Bob, to live in Pennsylvania, huh? Yes, that was a dig to you. All of you lawyers.
An extreme example is a lawyer in an instance held a 5% down payment. Well, at the closing, he or she, I don't recall, simply just gave that
forgave
sum.
Forgave the 5%.
No, gave the 5%. So if it was picture $500,000, 5% is $25,000. The lawyer held the $25,000 during the pendency of the transaction and then just took the entirety of that down payment in escrow and handed it to the broker. So really, the deal went on without the down payment. It just was like this little sum of money held in someone's holding pattern and then handed to the broker. So it literally became the exact same sum. The down payment was the same as the broker's commission.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yes, I think if we dig deep enough, we could always find, on a more much larger generic scale to it all, I think, again, at the end of the day, as Victoria had just asked, it's the buyer who really is the one ending up paying
for
it.
Sure, but who cares about us? Do you think buyers are in any way aware that they're paying the brokers to represent the parties? Do you think that when they make an offer, do you think anyone contemplates that, or are they just...
No, I don't. Exactly. I think, quite frankly, both parties are much more in the dark to the whole scope of the entire process than we let on.
Okay, well then, I have a question for Victoria. This is kind of a tough one. Then let's pretend you're a seller.
We're going to get a tough
and this
question.
Is what happens in, let's say, Pennsylvania too. How do you explain to a seller that they have to pay for the representation of a contractual counterpart? Because that is not seen anywhere else, except in limited instance where, on an as-needed basis, a litigant in a divorce might pay for the other party's representation. Like, one side can't afford it. But tell me where else...
They're the deepest pocket. That's why.
That's a good out of good reason.
Cases.
Where else in America are you paying someone in a transaction to represent against
represented
you?
Represented by somebody else. Yes, I agree.
Nowhere,
but they have the deepest pocket. If it didn't happen, the world of real estate wouldn't continue to go.
I agree. But the sellers don't...
That's where FHA
do you see this changing?
No.
Because this is what this is all about, right? We're in a movement of change. Do you see that changing?
No.
No.
When I see that it's working.
Absolutely not.
And TV shows like Million Dollar... No, they can't be. And the only agent for change there could have been would be, what the agents are fearful, that Zillow or these third-party syndicators / carpetbaggers, new entrants to the market, might say, wait a minute, I could put your property out on the MLS and, avoid that. But I will tell you that, that's not changing. There's just too the NAR is too robust. We are too dyed in the wool in how we handle things. But just to touch on that last point, think about it. On the old HUD or the new TRID, there's going to be, number one, a line item for the representation for the contractual counterpart, the buyer. Right, it's on the back second page, so it's a discernible cost. And maybe worse, I've had clients that say, wait a minute, I'm paying this clown to try to get a lower offer? How, counterintuitive is that? That you're the buyer's agent is having to justify their position.
But you have a seller agent who's your listing agent who's representing you.
Yes, to the best of their abilities. But
right.
That makes sense to pay your advocate, your fiduciary. Does it make any sense to pay for the person representing the other side of the country wants the lowest price, so you're helping them achieve the lowest price? Do you think sellers are aware of that when they think, here's what they think, and tell me if you agree. They think whatever percentages, we're not going to talk about percentages, 3 apples, 5 apples, 6 apples, whatever the number is, they think that's the cost. They don't realize it's broken up in halves, usually, and one side is working against
you. Think the seller doesn't realize that?
Yes.
I think the seller realizes
that. I
think the seller definitely realizes that.
I think a good listing agent does explain that properly.
Exactly.
Well, no, they might explain that there's going to be a buyer representation. Do they further go on to explain that you're paying someone who's working for you and you're paying someone who's not working for you? You think they do that at a listing appointment? That doesn't happen.
I don't think they see it that way. I think that they're seeing that this person has brought them a qualified buyer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once upon a time, remember, too, the seller did pay it. That was called sub-agency.
That's once upon a time.
So it's...
Buyer agency became more prevalent because of agency lawsuits across the country. Because I was going to go show my sister a house, obviously, it didn't even make any sense that I was somehow representing this seller. And I think based on your thinking or your thought process, that the seller would be paying that commission, because obviously you got to have representation on the same side of the table, and that's why sub-agency was the way it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But through litigation, it switched over because agents were really, really more representing the buyer. They just never decided to figure out another way to change the commission structure application.
And characterize it that way.
So it became more of a finder's fee, if you will, that got paid on that behalf. And the sales pitch to that was that Mr. and Mrs. Seller, the reason this is happening, this kind of now reduces the liability factor because now you're no longer on the hook for Bob the realtor who just said the basement never leaks when they never asked you if the basement never leaked in the first place.
Okay.
For that, they bought protection, if you will. It's almost an insurance policy, if you will.
The larger issue is that of, quote-unquote, the market. And Victoria touched on a point before, that buyers just get in a car if they're qualified and they check out properties, and that was the way it was. They had no other way. This goes back to the
back in the day, they had to come to the office,
right,
because we controlled all of the information. We had our big MLS books. If you wanted to get into a house, you had to come and see the book.
And I love to say the evolution. That was all the information was inside the four walls of that building.
That's right.
Then it seeped out with email. Then it seeped out with...
Well, once the internet came about.
Oh, so what about this? There were cell phones before there's internet, so there was no texting.
Right.
But some agent, my mom was one, where I'd be asking her what she's doing, talking to someone at 7:45 at night. So cell phones was the first way to break out of the office. So after business hours, they could give some information. Now it's information is totally available. But the point I want to make is, the realtors regard the MLS as, Victoria, quote unquote, the market? Should If we know that buyers are searching everywhere, maybe least so with agents, should the MLS or the members of MLS any longer be, quote-unquote, and making hand signs, the market, the quote signs? They're not the market. If people can search properties out of the realtor's offices on their own at any time, day or night, then I don't think that the MLS is any longer the market.
Are you saying that, if I'm understanding for clarification, Scott, are you saying that you're saying that the MLSs are no longer the marker for...
The market.
I'm saying
buyers don't care.
Well,
buyers...
But the syndication, I mean, really, if you want to really break it down, in my opinion, is that because our industry was so incredibly and still remains competitive, that was easy for me to say, between each brand out there, instead of us all kind of joining and recognizing what was happening in front of us, we almost ran away from one another because we still wanted to keep what is mine is mine and what's yours is yours, and we're not going to share, we're not going to open anything up. And then all of a sudden, so with the advancement of technology, that hard work that I did to form a neighborhood to pick up a listing, now there's these computer geeks that go in and figure it all out, how to spider through the MLS codes to grab all the information, and now they turn around and sell you that your listing, your hard work, your hard efforts, they're going to sell that listing back to you.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And we really screwed that up.
Well,
now,
I mean,
Zillow and Trulia are becoming the mainstream of the way buyers and
Realtor.com is doing it too.
Realtor.com too. But this is a public facing.
Yes.
It's a public facing show, and the guy or gal listening does not care. The commercials Zillow puts out are great. They get the mom a little kid on her lap, and she's using her finger.
Yeah, but the consumers should care because they have no idea who they're getting off the other phone.
Right. Well, Bob, I want to thank you for calling us today. Thank you for all the wealth of information that you provided.
You're very welcome.
We are going to...
I'm sorry we don't have you in this market. We could use some insight like that.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It was
thank
fun.
You very much.
See you now. Good night.
We are going to a break. When we return, give us a call at 914-693-5700. Let us know your thoughts.
Adding another third.
I would imagine a lot of people would want the option to make that choice.
So why do you think that any Ralph Nader consumer advocacy group is not even pushing for anyone to get a choice, pay it today at closing, to avoid financing it? I mean, look, people have a choice with their car. You could buy it or you could finance it, right? Every day you're given that choice at a Ford or Chevy dealership. But in a real estate transaction, it is 100% finance and no option. Do you think that's fair? Don't you think that...
No.
Good
point. No, I don't.
Well, you're running an office right now. Are you giving consumers that choice?
We will give them the consumers that choice. One thing that this, to start, to give them a choice, I think that it's important to give them an idea, or depending on the range of what they buy, what the commission will be. I think that it's a virtual absence of any indication of buyer's agent's compensation. It's never mentioned. So the first step is to let
them know. How many consumers do you think would really take the choice? Would you take that choice, Lisa?
I would not be in a financial position to be able to take that choice.
Okay, but those okay. that are...
Let me ask you another question. Are you a homeowner?
I'm not.
Okay. Are you thinking about buying a home?
Yes, I am. I'm hoping to buy a home in the next year.
Okay, and will you be using a realtor?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
And are, check this one. Are you married? Can't do that.
Hey.
Are you married?
No.
See, but that's okay because I'm not really representing. But did you recognize that? Do you think that buyers or clients, in any case, are aware of? Are you aware that what I just committed was a faux pas / violation? Do you understand?
Yes. Well, I know my mortgage professional cannot ask me that question.
What about your realtor?
I don't know if they can or not.
Right. Well, there's such a thing.
Depends on if it's a guy or a girl.
Oh, it does.
Does it really?
I guess it's a cute guy or girl. I don't know, but I don't.
It depends on why you're asking.
Depends, right? Well, within,
that's really the question.
Right, well, within the confines of the transaction, I'll let you know that all real estate professionals subject to the Federal Fair Housing Act. I don't know if I think from 1964. So that's women and familial status is a protected class. And if someone asks you that, call us because we'll let them know that's not possible and not appropriate.
Okay, I will absolutely do that.
Yeah, it's really not necessary for them to call us.
They can. We can be like a form of a whistleblower if someone would abridge Lisa's rights.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lisa, very much for calling and listening to our show. Hey, Scott, by the way, you mentioned you asked her if she was married, which you probably should not have done.
I did it. But I committed that violation.
Yes, you have committed a violation here. But although you really didn't truly commit a violation,
because
you're not representing her, right?
Park,
correct.
Yes.
Do you know that 18% of home buyers in the market today are single females?
I don't know that number, but I heard there's a really large increase, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, and there's also an increase in unmarried couples. 15% are unmarried couples, 11% are single males, and 18% were single females.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're doing it for the obvious reasons, I think. The pride of ownership. You actually have to live somewhere, too. They're not just investment tools. Plus, the tax treatments are so advantageous. It beats renting. You know, look at the comparison between renting and owning.
Yeah, but years back, we didn't see that so much. You know, years back, there was a pattern that we all followed, and that has changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to see. I'm full of little tidbits today. I just want to share a useful
cornucopia.
Little tidbit. What was that?
A cornucopia,
yeah.
Digital resources.
Digital resources? Is that what you said?
Yeah. It's supposed to be fun, right? This show,
right. Do you know... did you know that if you're selling a home in California, and within the last 3 years someone died in the home, that you must disclose that?
I didn't. Did you know that in New York there's no duty of disclosure?
That is correct.
That is correct.
You do not have to do that in New York, but you do have to do it in California. But if the person died in the house within the last 3 years from AIDS, they are protected because they would consider that discrimination.
I didn't know that. But who's the estate? Who's protected? The deceased?
No, they don't have to. They don't have to disclose it.
Oh, interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
You have to disclose if someone passed away inside the house within the last 3 years.
I know. We actually know within our company...
It's actually considered a material defect, by the way.
I would say, yeah, like a leaky roof.
Yeah.
But we know someone who represented the sellers of the Amityville Horror, another exit agent. Do you know who that is?
You know what? To be honest, I wasn't paying attention to you, Scott.
So I'll say it again then. Someone within our company actually represented the sellers of the Amityville Horror house. Yeah.
If I had to guess, I would say it would be Joanne.
She did. Yeah,
yes.
And I've even seen contracts where their representations made, and this is for those of you that are into soothsayers or prognosticators, that the house is free from paranormal or supernatural phenomena. I've seen that representation.
Would you buy a house like that? I would never. Me personally, I would never ever buy a house that is well known like the Amityville Horror House, or even just the thought of that.
Well, I will tell you, you know, that I saw something on the Facebook where it, Walter White's from Breaking Bad, the house where that was filmed, the owners are sitting out front and taking pictures for $5. People are doing this pilgrimage to Walter White, for you Breaking Bad fans, house out there where, and it's a great, these people sitting on beach chairs in Albuquerque, and we know someone from Albuquerque there, and they're just, there's a like a Elvis mansion. What is it? Graceland kind of thing.
Graceland, yeah. Well, you know, I probably wouldn't be afraid to live in the Graceland mansion, but
it's not big place, by the way.
Not so sure about anything else.
Well, wait, Graceland, he died there.
I know. I'm not so sure I'd be afraid of him. I don't know why.
Yeah, he'd be a friendly ghost,
yeah,
like Casper.
I don't. That is kind of strange, right?
He's
the king of rock and roll. I mean, what will you hear? Him singing?
What do you think? You know, chains down the hallway like Scooby-Doo or something? No.
I don't know. So would you live in a house where it is believed that
supposedly
someone died and has that, yeah?
Yeah, I have personal experience in that. I would.
Yeah?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, you have ghosts in your house?
I don't know about ghosts, but we decided to live there. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Are they friendly ghosts?
Very.
Mm. Did you ask the ghost if she's married?
that would not be discriminatory, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I think you'd be okay.
Mm.
So the house that you currently live in is occupied by supernatural.
We've heard noise, and we think that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Wow.
I'll show you. You've been there, so
yeah,
you know.
I'm not coming back. That scares me, I have to say. It really does. I will be truthful. You know, I bought a house. I didn't buy it. I actually went into contract a few years back on a house, and then we found out that the woman died in the house, and for whatever ridiculous reason, it just freaked me out, and we ended up losing our money getting out of this contract, but I didn't want the house.
Well, look, in the old days, people were born and people died in a house, right?
They used to have wakes in the house.
Sure, makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like a carve a glazed turkey or ham or something, that's what happened. So, look, that's old world, it's medieval. I don't think buyers are sensitive to that as much anymore.
You don't think so? Because you're not.
Because I'm not.
Okay. The world according to Scott Forcino.
I have opinions on that.
All right. How much do you think the White House is worth?
Is there an appraised value in the White House?
There is an appraised value on the White House.
I couldn't even say. It's like, what, 40 bedrooms or something? I don't know.
I've
been in the
no
White
idea.
House.
Yeah? Who did you go visit in the White House?
I was in the White House in January 19th.
The answer is the president.
Right. But I will tell you, my own experience, I met George Bush Daddy 1989, Inauguration Day.
Senior. Very nice.
Kind of a class trip.
So how much do you think it's valued at?
$50 million.
Double? Yeah. $110
million. It's got to have some security, right?
Mm.
And I heard it's got a great lawn.
It does have
a
great lawn.
Right. They have Lincoln's bedroom there.
You're very witty today.
I got it.
That's why you're
that's
my
why
co-host.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. You want to talk about any stats?
I don't know stats off the... You
no?
Know,
what's going on in New York State?
Okay. Tell me. Well, how many realtors are in New York State?
That's a good question. I would probably say about 57,000.
Very close. 64,000.
All right. See that? That's because a lot are coming back. You know what? I don't even think we have time for stats. But in New York State, I'll go really quick. Pending sales have increased. Closings have increased. Prices have increased. The only thing that's down is inventory. We'll talk more about stats next time. But do you want to say anything else before
we go?
I'm
just happy to be here to an inaugural show. We're not going to be here next week for the Labor Day holiday. We're really going to be here every Monday, 6 to 7. Any questions you have, you could reach out. Maybe we'll give you cell numbers to text.
All right. Mm-hmm. How do they reach you? Give me your name and how do they reach you?
I'm Scott Forcino. My cell?
Scott Forcino, Exit Realty.
S. Forcino at ExitRealtyGroup.com.
Very good. I am Victoria Rivadeneira, and I could be reached at VictoriaRIVA.com. Thank you very much for listening. And tune in next week for the Real Estate Revolution.